Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Hi there, guys. It's Wendy Snyder in for John Williams, and we are starting off the Wintrust Business Lunch with the owner of Replay Lincoln Park, Mark Kwiatkowski. How are you, Mark?
Doing well, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
You know, I'm looking at your website right now, and I am a 708er, and I am lame, and I need to get out in the city more, because if you go to replaylincolnpark.com, you have a lot of cool things coming up.
Yeah, we've always got some fun stuff going on. We do these, you know, at our core, we're an arcade bar, and then we do these pop-up events on the regular. We have a great team of artists and mixologists and a great staff that puts on these regular events that just immerse you in different fandoms.
So I can go in there and play vintage arcade games, including pinball, which I have a Captain Fantastic pinball machine, by the way. I'm not very good at it.
That's an old one, I think.
Yeah, it's Elton John. It's pretty cool. It's my husband's, actually. But I'm getting better at it. And skee ball, this is all going on there. And what's going on with the Lollapalooza pop-up?
So we call it Replay Palooza, and we've had some success in the past doing music-themed events. So we create these photo opportunities and give away tickets and play music of featured artists. We did a great one for Harry Styles when he was here last fall. Then we did one in May with Taylor Swift, and now we did an all-encompassing event, month-long event called Replay Palooza. Last week was emo, this week is divas, so that's headlined obviously by Beyonce, because Beyonce's here this weekend. So the divas that were, you know, headlining are Beyonce, Rihanna, Ariana Grande, Britney Spears, Billie Eilish, Lady Gaga, on and on and on. And we created this festival vibe, so kind of like Lollapalooza, as far as just that fun city feel. And then we feature the music of different artists. This week it's divas. Next week is Devos. So we've got The Weeknd, Drake, Bad Bunny, Kendrick Lamar. Those are some of our headliners. And then the week after that is EDM, coinciding with Replay Palooza while it's here. And we're going to be giving out or raffling off tickets to Lollapalooza. And it's just, you know, an opportunity for people to come and enjoy the music, enjoy the artists. And even if you don't love Beyonce, for example, you just like seeing people singing along joyously and just having a good time to their favorite artists. So even if, like I said, even if you're not a fan of a particular artist, you just love seeing people having fun.
Yeah, and that's just it. When other people are having fun, you're having it as well. What's your top drink? Your favorite drink over at Replay?
The top drink right now, I would call, I like whiskey, so the sugar going down, kind of inspired by the EDM pop-up. And then there's a shot that we have called the Single Ladies. That's a fun shot. We've got some non-alcoholic versions. We've got and we just added a slushy machine for this pop-up. So we've got some great frozen cocktails, perfect for, you know, that hot summer night.
That is. Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So you can go to replaylincolnpark.com. What is the address for Replay Palooza in your bar?
2833 North Sheffield. So Sheffield, just north of Diversey. We're open every day. It's free to get in. No cover charge ever. And the arcade games and the pinballs are free as well. So you can't beat that. We just ask you to come in and buy a drink, alcoholic, non-alcoholic. We're 21 and up and open 7 days a week.
Mark Kwiatkowski, thank you so much. Owner of Replay Lincoln Park. And we are talking to Ted Rossman. Ted is a senior industry analyst over at Bankrate.com. Ted, Pete was telling me, oh, we're going to talk to Ted about junk fees. And I said, what the heck are junk fees? We're about to find out.
Junk fees are basically surprise charges. The Biden administration and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau have been fighting against these, really calling a lot of them disproportionate to the value received. So we're talking about things like hotel resort fees and airline seat selection fees, concert ticket add-on fees, credit card late fees, things like that.
And they're put on there. Do we see that they're added on there? Is it a hidden charge?
The hidden charges are the most objectionable. And there has actually been some progress recently in the name of transparency. In fact, there was an event at the White House a couple weeks back with the executives from a lot of the big ticketing companies like Live Nation and Ticketmaster and SeatGeek, and they've all pledged more transparency. And Airbnb made a similar move late last year. I applaud the transparency. I'm a little bit cynical, though, in terms of whether or not this will actually save us money, because I think fees are often like whack-a-mole, and one goes down and another one comes up. I think a lot of this, we may end up being charged the same or more. It's just going to be positioned differently. So that's good for comparison shopping, but not immediate relief either.
So I know that my bank, for instance, I move money around between several accounts. And a lot of times if you had like more than four transfers, you would get a fee. I had to stop in the bank for something and they said that they've eliminated those fees. So is that, that's a good thing for me, but is it common?
That is a good thing. And we have been seeing some movement on the banking side as well. Overdraft fees came down in a lot of banks last year, even went away entirely in some cases. Although I would caution, I think there's a bit of PR spin with some of this, where oftentimes banks do still charge these in one form or another, maybe not on every account or maybe not in quite the same levels as before. But we found the average overdraft fee is still about $30, down from about $35. And the other thing, though, is that ATM fees are at a record high. And sometimes we see the minimum balance required to avoid checking fees goes up. So that's kind of what I mean with the whole whack-a-mole thing. And it's relevant with credit card late fees, too. The CFPB is trying to bring those down to $8 from a current cap of $30. I don't think banks would take that one lying down, though. I think they would definitely raise fees elsewhere or maybe even make it harder to get a credit card for some people.
And so how will the consumers be impacted on all this?
Transparency is probably the biggest potential win, and we are already seeing that with concert tickets and sports tickets and home rentals and things like that. I do like the idea of being able to comparison shop more accurately. It's a big pain point now with hotels, for instance, where if there's a resort fee tacked on, you might think you're paying $150 and it's actually $200, and that's not fun to find out when you're checking out. So that, I think, is the main goal of this, is to just make fees more transparent. But like I said, I'm a bit skeptical that we'll truly save money from it. I think it's really more of a positioning thing than anything else.
Did the pandemic have any effect on how these charges were added? I know for some things, restaurants for sure, and car dealers still sometimes have like a $4,900, I don't even know what it's called, like a convenience fee or something.
Yeah, I think the pandemic has emboldened a lot of companies. And then related, of course, would be high inflation. I think a lot of companies are sort of hiding behind these things. And because that's another important thing. When fees go up, they don't usually come down. So this kind of resets the bar. And for a while, restaurants and other establishments were tacking on COVID surcharges. I think sometimes there's this misconception that businesses say, oh, we don't want to raise prices, or we don't want to raise them any higher than we already have, so let's just tack a line item on there. And that, I think, rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I think a lot of people would rather just pay one price that they think is fair. But businesses are doing this. They're also asking for more tips, which I think is related when you get prompted at the coffee shop or food truck or elsewhere to add a tip. I think that's another hidden fee or surcharge in many respects, because even if it's optional, it sometimes doesn't feel optional. It can be kind of awkward.
All right, so I'm on Bankrate.com right now and survey 66% of Americans have a negative view of tipping, and I heard you mention that. I went and picked up a muffin downstairs today, and I felt really pressured into giving him a tip. And we're all feeling pressured. When can we stop tipping? And especially, like, if you order food at a restaurant and you go pick it up yourself, part of that is so you don't have to tip or pay a delivery fee. When can we stop feeling guilty about tipping? Or will we ever?
There's been a huge proliferation in this. Yeah, I think technology is enabling it, payment terminals and apps. And I think it does amount to a revenue grab by the company in many cases. I don't think that we always need to tip when we're just picking up a simple takeout order, but that's kind of a separate issue from the pressure to tip. I think that, you know, personally, and I know others feel the same way, that I don't really feel bad hitting no tip if it's just a really simple pickup order like that. But the pressure is there. So I think the pressure will persist, but honestly, I don't think you should always have to tip in that instance. We should, though, in my opinion, be tipping 20% for sit-down service. We've seen a big erosion there where a lot of people are not doing that. In fact, only about two-thirds of diners say that they always tip at a sit-down restaurant. So to me, it's kind of separate things that we should be tipping for sit-down service. But I think there's been a backlash in part because we feel like we're paying enough already.
Well, if somebody's bringing you your food, you should tip them. But if you pick it up, I don't know. I think Catholics tip better because Catholics are guilty. I hate when they turn that thing around and it's like, would you like to tip? I can't hit the no. All right. Well, thank you very much. It's great to talk to you. Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst over at Bankrate, bankrate.com. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And joining us now, Jim Dahlke, editor over at American Inno, national editor. How are you, Jim?
Hi, good. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. I hear you with John all the time, and you try to make sense out of things for me because I don't really understand a lot of this. So let's start with this. Commercial real estate startups are facing rising interest rates and uncertain return to the office. A lot of people got very comfortable with working from home, and that's changing a bit?
Yeah, you know, really what I wanted to do with this story was kind of take a look at how are the startups that sort of serve the commercial real estate industry, how are they faring during all this? Obviously, you know, we've been talking about the commercial real estate industry really since the onset of the pandemic. You know, what is the state, you know, for commercial real estate? You know, the office buildings in the 10 largest cities still sit about half full despite, you know, our best efforts from some of the biggest, you know, companies across the country to tell people, hey, we want you back in the office 2 days a week, 3 days a week, 4 days a week. The return to just it has not really gone back to full force the way that folks had thought. And to some degree, remote work is still here. And so, you know, what I really wanted to do was, hey, how are the startups that serve this industry? So these are software companies, service and service startups that sell directly to the CRE industry. How are they faring right now? And I spoke to an investor actually at JLL. So JLL Spark is a venture investor that backs a lot of these so-called prop tech companies, property tech businesses. And yeah, times are tricky right now. It is, you know, a lot of these software startups are really struggling, right? You know, they're serving an industry that really is kind of hesitant to really invest in a lot of new technology as they're still trying to get some certainty around, hey, how many businesses are occupying our spaces? How many employees are they bringing back? So it's certainly very much still industry in flux, and the software startups that sell to this space are certainly feeling the squeeze as well. Funding to property tech startups has gone way down. So back in 2021, startups raised about $32 billion in total venture funding. Last year, that dropped to less than $20 billion. So a pretty big drop off there, and I would expect that to continue to fall.
What happens to all these empty office buildings? I know there were places where you could go rent an office building if you didn't want to have a big corporation. But you're right. What's the percentage of things that are empty in these giant office buildings here in the city and other cities?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a top line takeaway that some of the data is showing right now is that Office buildings in the 10 largest cities in the U.S. are all at less than half capacity. I think it's an issue that we're seeing really across the board. Now, there are some software startups in the commercial real estate space that are actually kind of taking advantage of some of the pain points here and doing well. One is a startup called HQO. They're kind of really selling software for the tenant experience. So they help office buildings use software to fill unused space, for example. So say a tenant in the building wanted to throw a rooftop party within HQO software, you can book that rooftop space. You can kind of continue to further engage people who are coming into the office and really use it as an engagement and retention tool. So there are some softwares that are actually doing really well in this space, and some startups are taking advantage of this. Other startups are doing things like sensor tracking to get a sense of how full are office buildings. You can kind of count on your own when you've got your office administrator maybe, but you know what these sensors are doing is giving a really detailed, accurate representation of, hey, here's just how many people are coming into the office, and that's technology that these companies are really finding useful. And a third example, of a type of startup that's still remaining to do well kind of in this environment is a company that provides these sort of physical virtual portals that can be used as virtual office spaces and meeting spaces, like in break rooms, for example. So if you've got a group in New York City and a group in San Francisco, you've got these wall boards that essentially serve as a break room for kind of these distributed workforces. Everybody can kind of congregate virtually at the same time. So, hey, even though it's a tricky time for startups that operate in the commercial real estate industry, there's still some areas of success as well.
And they have to come up with some creative ideas and ways to pivot and evolve. It's really interesting to hear all about this. There was also the second annual Tech Chicago Week that just happened. What did venture capitalists learn over there?
Yeah, so Tech Chicago Week, second year running here. Really great event. Had some big name speakers as well. Scottie Pippen stopped by. So it's really a great initiative in the city for really bringing the tech community back together. And it was something obviously that was missed during the pandemic, not just in Chicago, but for cities all over the place. And that sort of in-person connection is big for the tech and startup community. And so it's great to have Tech Chicago Week back up and running. And one piece of advice that one venture capitalist gave to startups in the crowd really was, be a cockroach, not a unicorn. And I really like that because we talk about unicorns in the startup world so much. These are companies that reach $1 billion valuation, super fast growing, early stage, late stage growth stage startups. And, what his advice was, hey, don't worry about hitting a unicorn valuation. Just be a cockroach. Just stay alive. It's a down market right now for startups. Venture funding is much harder to come by than it was 2 years ago. But hey, as long as you can be a cockroach, stay alive, get through this, you're going to be all right.
That's a great way to understand it. And I was reading about venture capitalists. Do they not normally fund a startup at the actual beginning of it, at the outset of it? Do they wait a little bit?
Yeah, so really, often the first checks in for startups are, what we call angel investors. And so, these are investors that are willing to take on a little bit or quite a bit more risk at the earliest stages and write those first checks. And, often what we see in startups, too, is a lot of friends and family, quote unquote, around. So this can be a wealthy aunt or a wealthy uncle or a wealthy mom and dad write your check. But, friends and family rounds also come from a lot of other startup founders. And so that's a big initiative actually right now in Chicago, is getting successful repeat founders to invest in the next stage of Chicago startups. So we're starting to see a little bit of it. Something that happens in Silicon Valley quite a bit. You sell your startup, you got a little bit of money, you invest in your friend's startup, the next kind of wave of startups. But that has happened less in Chicago, but I think we're starting to slowly see it, and it's certainly an initiative that lots of folks in town are really trying to get behind.
That's perfect. All right, so be a cockroach, not a unicorn. That's what I walked away with today, which doesn't sound nice, actually, when you're hearing it, but when you explained it, it makes a lot of sense. I really appreciate you talking to us today, Jim.
Thanks, Wendy. Take care.
Jim Dahlke, national editor of American Inno. You can go to chicagoinno.com. And now here's Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's Lincoln Yards project could be growing. Developer Sterling Bay is proposing two new apartment buildings, including more than 600 units. The project is along the north branch of the Chicago River. The developer is seeking city approval for a 16-story building and a 27-story building at 1840 North Marcy. Sterling Bay has also proposed apartment projects nearby on Kingsbury and Southport. The total number of apartments near Lincoln Yards could top 1,100. The developer already has approval for 6,000 units at Lincoln Yards itself. Chicago-based United Airlines has reached an agreement with its pilots on a new contract. The deal would raise pilot pay up to 40% over the next 4 years. It follows more than 4 years of negotiations that included picketing, talk of a strike, and an offer that the pilots rejected. The pilots still have to vote to ratify the contract. The union says it'll put United pilots on par with their counterparts at Delta, who got a pay raise earlier this year. I'm Steve Gratanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And last week's news about Major League Cricket's first game in the United States got me thinking about crickets.
And now, oh boy, with Buddy Holland and his crickets.
No, not those crickets.
All of my kisses.
These crickets. And this woman.
My name is Shelby Smith. I am the owner of Jiminy Cricket.
The mother of crickets, as she calls herself, raises 15 to 20 million of them a year for us to eat. An update from her after I thank the Chevy Silverado HD for sponsoring us. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. A few years back, we featured Iowa farm girl Shelby Smith, who had played basketball at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, went to Ireland and got her master's in finance at Trinity College, and worked in banking for a few years over there. But unfulfilled by banking, she went back to the family corn and soybean farm, where she decided to create her own niche by raising crickets. How's business going, Shelby?
Things are still booming.
In fact, it's going so well, she's almost always sold out of crickets thanks to other companies that sell her crickets under their brands on Amazon and elsewhere.
Everybody tells me it's a good problem to have, and I tend to agree with them. So perhaps I need to be looking at building a second cricket barn.
Who knew?
Yes, I never would have predicted that, you know, I would go over to Ireland only to move back to the family farm and then end up growing crickets for human consumption. I don't think that you could have ever predicted that for me.
Just curious, what is the most popular style or flavor of crickets?
By far, our most popular products are our roasted crickets, which are our whole crickets.
Loaded with protein.
You know, they're between 60 and 70% protein, so double the protein of beef.
Shelby Smith of GymAndEatCrickets.com. That's where you can see more. It is spelled GymEat. Crickets. And she'll be at the Iowa State Fair.
August 10th through the 21st. And I am upstairs across from the Butter Cow.
From the farm to your belly, it is National Peach Ice Cream Day. Topped off by some crunchy crickets.
They taste like a cross between a sunflower seed and a corn nut.
I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
We have a good Italian girl on the line with us, Janelle Iacino, also known as the Bug Girl with Rose Pest Solutions. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I have to say that I have had Rose Pest Solutions coming out to my house for many years. It all started with mice. There, I said it. And I felt guilty about having mice in my house, but the problem was solved, and now I have some ants. I feel like I'm a dirty house cleaner, but bugs are trying to move in with us. You know that, Janelle.
Oh, yeah, of course. With this weather that we've had, it's no surprise. No surprise at all.
Okay, but that's why Rose Pest Solutions come through. And I'm telling you, my problems are solved, but there's a big problem that I need help with. Mosquitoes are going to be bad this year, aren't they?
Yeah, they already are. And it's because there was such a delay with the rain. I mean, we went, 2 months without barely any rain. And so now that we've had flooding and, you know, we've all seen city sewers back up, there's streets flooded and stuff happening. That is a recipe for populations of bugs to explode.
So that is the sitting stagnant water or very, because now I have mushrooms in my yard. So there's just so much moisture out there, and that's what's bringing them into us, correct?
Yes, exactly. That's what's flooding out ant colonies underground. That's what's causing mosquitoes to breed like crazy. You know, mosquitoes only need the amount of water that fits in a tiny little bottle cap, you know. And if you think about after a rain, if you look in your yard, every planter saucer collects water and little things that you might have in your yard. And those are the things that will ultimately cause mosquitoes to breed out of control.
All right. So are there some preventative tips we can take? I just want to mention that I am type O blood, and I could be sitting with 10 people and I'm the one who gets bit all the time. And I was just looking it up, and people with type O blood get bit more.
You know, there are so many, there are so many things with that. And you know, it all comes down to your whole scent signature profile, not only your blood, but what are you eating and how heavy of a breather are you? You know, we emit CO2 and mosquitoes will use that to detect whether or not you're a tasty snack, you know. And think about it. If you've got a dog that's running around in the yard panting, that mosquito is going to be like, ooh, this is a tasty snack too, because they're panting, their mouths are open. So that's just one of the things that draws them to us. But yeah, your whole signature profile, that's a whole thing. But let's talk about prevention. The number one most important thing you can do is protect your body. We cannot protect what's going on in this environment. You know, you got air pollution going on. You've got crazy weather patterns, viruses. West Nile, you know, is already in the north burbs of Chicagoland. Evanston was the first report of a positive test this year already. But we see it every year. DuPage County gets hit for West Nile every year. Always protect yourself. If you know you're going to be outside, bring insect repellent and don't just spray it before you leave the house and you think you're good. Use it like sunscreen. You got to apply it liberally over your clothes, over your skin, all of that, and frequently to make sure you're always protected. And that doesn't mean you have to douse yourself in DEET either. There's some really great natural products. One of them is active ingredient is oil of lemon eucalyptus, which I personally love myself. Smells good, and it's just as effective. So,
all right, Janelle, I
always protect yourself. Yeah,
that's first and foremost. And I've heard, and I'll be honest with you, I've read it somewhere, and I never tried it. But I'm asking you because you're the bug girl. Somebody told me if you put like a dryer sheet in your pocket, that will prevent mosquitoes from biting you. Any truth to that?
I mean, they're not going to bite you where it is in your pocket, I guess, but. You know, it's just like the citronella candles. Think about the radius of the fume that they're putting out, maybe a foot radius, you know. So a better idea would be if you're sitting outside, get a fan plugged in and get the fan blowing out away from you, because mosquitoes are not strong flyers and they're not going to be able to fly against the strength of that fan. So if you get a fan blowing low, you know, maybe underneath the table and out away from you, that will keep them away from you too. So little things like that. Insect repellent, get a fan blowing outside, and make sure you're getting rid of all that standing water. And also, if you're near, you know, some hot zones for breeding, if you might have a pond nearby or you're in a rural area, consider a preventative treatment for the yard. We do those every month, and it guarantees 85% reduction or more in populations.
That's can't go wrong. Yeah, you can't. When are the peak mosquito feeding times?
Well, it used to be dawn and dusk. That was like what we grew up knowing, you know, dawn and dusk. That's when fishermen go out fishing, and that's when the fish are biting, you know. But no, there are actually species of mosquitoes now that are daytime biters as well. So it doesn't matter what time of day. Yeah, there is more of a risk at dawn and dusk, but there during the day, you've got biters out as well. So always be protected.
All right, now I have to ask you a bug identification question. There is a bug that I have seen outside that looks like a giant mosquito. It has the same shape of a mosquito, but it's really big. What is that? That isn't just like a giant mosquito.
It could be some kind of a crane fly or midge. Some of them that are the really big ones like that, they don't actually bite. They're just kind of it's a different species altogether. The ones that we got to worry about are the ones like the Asian tiger mosquito, and there's a couple of others that, you know, we see frequently in backyards and stuff. But yeah, those big ones, they don't bite, so you're all right with those.
All right, good. And West Nile virus, is there anything that we should be looking for? I mean, I know mosquitoes are the prime way to get West Nile.
Right. And it's actually, you know, you always look for clues of dead birds. They're saying that crows are especially susceptible. Crows and blue jays are especially susceptible to the West Nile virus. So if you see a dead crow or a dead blue jay, first of all, don't touch it. But you might want to report it. Call the Department of Public Health. Ask them what their procedures are for handling something like that, because they will want to test it. That's how they're finding it in some of these other suburbs north of Chicago right now.
She's the bug girl with Rose Pest Solutions. You have a great company. I love my guy, Gary, who comes over and takes care of us. I really do. He's wonderful.
Yay, Gary. He is.
All right. Janelle Iacino, if you have any problems, any questions, how do people reach you?
Yeah, you can give us a call at 800-GOT-PEST. And that'll route you to the nearest office. Or you can always get a free quote at rosepestcontrol.com. And as far as identification goes, you can even text us or email us pictures. If you have a question about something weird that you found in your yard, we're happy to take a look at it. That's no charge. Free identification all day long.
You do know your bugs. I'll give you that. Thank you so much, Janelle.
Thanks, Wendy.
Janelle Iacino, the bug girl with Rose Pest Control. And we've got news coming up next from the Wintrust Business. I'm wrapping that up, right? Okay, we're done with that.